Till now we have seen on-off signals, and in particular we have seen how to interface them to the port of a microprocessor, depending on the fact that the port is sensible to the edges of the signals or to the assumption of a definitive level. We have also seen how to a microprocessor can address the chip select of a port to perform the effective acquisition of an off-on signal. And we have considered some issues related to the connection of those signals to the port, eventually exploiting an optocoupler's device. Now we address the issue related to the need of eventually filtering those signals. In most cases, they are produced by relays, electronic switches, push buttons, limit switches. In slide 23, some devices are shown related to the possibility of allowing to an object, to a device, to move along a direction, but to stop when a certain point has been reached, the so-called end of run. At the end of the road that the device or the object makes, you will find some of those, let's say, red limiters. More correctly, they can be called lever, stems, or push buttons, of course, that when touched sends a signal to the microprocessor, so blocking the movement of the particular object we are considering. In the right part of the slide, instead, the limiting device, the limit switch that is shown, performs the same operation but on a rotating movement. So the limit is when the rotation reaches a certain angular amplitude. In all the cases, the contact, that is the perception that the object has arrived to the end of its own run, is due to, again, the contact between the device itself and the surface of a part of the limit switch. In any case, this contact could be not continuous, but in some cases, this contact can be at first a contact, then it could happen a rebound backward, then the object makes the contact again with the surface of the limit switch, and this situation repeats for some times. Correspondingly to this, in the slide 22 it is well shown what kind of signal is acquired by the microprocessor. The information is, for example, corresponding to a signal high. The arrival of the device, of the object, at the end of the run is corresponding to a low level. And the commutation, that is the event that should have been happened, corresponds to those oscillations in the signal that say us that something happened, but we don't know precisely when the contact, and so when the real arrival, has been done. Due to this effect of rebounding in the contacts between the object and the switch limiter. Of course, this effect could be present when the object arrives, but also less important at the beginning of a new phase of acquisition, at the reset phase. That is when the signal goes from zero, from low, to high. In other words, the scenario that we have described is an event. That is, the on-off signal is not particularly important in terms of the level acquired, because if this would be important, the solution would be let's wait enough time. Instead, the problem is that an event, that is a commutation corresponding to something that has happened, first of all, cannot be established, because if you look at the oscillation phase, we don't know what is high and what is low. Moreover, it is not possible to establish the right instant into which this happened. So we have two problems that can be solved by filtering the signal in two possible ways, with an electronic circuit or an electronic approach, and with an algorithmic approach. The first is absolutely necessary if the signal is connected to an hardware device into which the commutation is detected to perform something. For example, if we are talking about a timer or a counter, the commutation will cause an increment or a decrement into the variable internally stored. Or conversely, if the signal is connected to a particular pin, input pin of a microprocessor, that commutation could start an interrupt request. So in both cases, it is necessary to avoid that misleading oscillation effect and to have a signal as clean as possible, as polite as possible, and, as we will see, into which the commutation is not slow, but is very squared, is very immediate. On the other hand, if instead of performing the acquisition through the hardware, we analyze the level of a signal on a sample-by-sample basis, by comparing the present acquisition with the previous one, an algorithmic approach it is necessary. The sampling will turn out in a set of values among which, due to the, let's say, false commutation, the fake commutation, some are significant and others are not. Those values that are not significant can be defined as spurious. The choice among them is driven by the information that the signal carries. In other words, it is possible that after the contact, I mean between the object and the limit switch, there is a period that is not significant, not important for us, into which all those transitions, all those commutations can happen, and for us could be a period that must be or can be eliminated. It is the so-called transient death time. Let's see how to do this kind of policies. This slide shows the importance of the Schmitt trigger usage in the electronic filtering. In fact, those oscillations that we have been seeing in the signal acquired by the microprocessor could be conveniently filtered by using a low-pass filter. So, like in the figure shown in slide 24, we have a couple of resistors, a capacitor, just to filtering those oscillations under the hypothesis that they will happen at a certain frequency. But this could be not enough. In fact, looking in the lower part of the slide, we see that that kind of up and down that happens at the beginning of the acquisition, and then when the signal comes back to the high level, could be transformed by a low-pass filtering into a very slow conversion, transformation, commutation from a high level to the low level, and vice versa, from the low level again to the high level. This is not good for the port of the microprocessor, since if from one side we could say that now it is clear that we don't have a continuous set of up and downs, but only a more or less a definite transition from a certain level to another one. On the other hand, the very slow transformation of the signal could maintain the port of the microprocessor better, the electronic circuits of the port of the microprocessor, into an uncertainty situation for too much time. We well know, in fact, that the electronics of a port that should detect a commutation is somehow related to the velocity of the commutation itself. In other words, the problem is that if the signal commutation is too slow, the time into which the port doesn't recognize the level of the signal itself could be too much, and this could affect the real-time capability of reaction of the microprocessor itself and all what it is related to it. The introduction of a Schmitt trigger improves the situation, tries to avoid such a problem. We well remember that a Schmitt trigger is a device whose characteristic is an hysteresis. Like shown in the figure in slide 25, we see that we have two thresholds in the commutation. Look at the input signal and look at the corresponding output signal. We have that when the input signal overcomes the threshold, so-called LH, from low to high, the output will be definitively high. But when the input signal, let's say, comes back, moves backward, that is, diminishes, so the commutation will be not conceived at the same threshold as before, but in another point. You clearly see in the diagram that we have another threshold from high to low that is quite different from the previous one, and only when the signal has reached that threshold the commutation will take place. Clearly, we have said in the past that this is not always an appreciated effect, because it introducing such a certain level of ambiguity in the relationship between an input and an output value. But in this case, this algorithm that more specifically, will is not an algorithm, is an electronic device with such a kind of transfer function. This kind of approach could be helpful. Let's look at its usage and its utility in the lower part of the figure shown in slide 25. We see that we have a very oscillating signal affected by several commutations. Of course, this is an example, not probably what happens in the reality, but just to understand better. Looking at the evolution of the signal, we see that after an initial phase into which the signal is under the HL threshold, we have a couple of oscillations, but only when the signal will overcome the low-high threshold, the output will be changed from low to high. Then we have a phase into which the signal is again oscillating around more or less the higher threshold, but only when it goes down beyond the high-low threshold, the output will be definitively transformed, changed into a low level. And this low level is maintained for a not trivial interval of time, into which the original signal oscillates even following an augmenting trend, but only when its evolution, its behavior, has overcome again the low-high threshold, we will have in the output signal another commutation. Clearly, such a kind of approach is very helpful for a microprocessor, for the electronics circuit of the microprocessor, because the output signal is very squared, and the capability of the electronics to discriminate between low and level is very good, is very immediate, no uncertainty at all. Of course, we pay a price, as always, that is, to have a commutation, we have to wait that the signal, the original input signal, changes from one threshold to the other one. And this requires time. In other words, we have a difference between the two threshold, and this implies that the commutation will not take place immediately, but only when the signal from high will go to the low, and from the low will go to the high. And this, of course, makes the detection of an event not exactly immediate, but with a certain level of delay. That is, of course, a drawback. The second situation that we take into account concerns the algorithmic filtering that, as I said previously, takes place when the acquisition of on-off signals from the microprocessor occurs through sampling. In slide 26, this situation is represented by all those vertical lines, dot vertical lines, that shows the instance of time into which the microprocessor is sampling the particular line on which the signal arrives. In the upper part, VI, is the signal without any kind of filtering, and we clearly see some situations into which the commutation takes place, but only for a few instants, then it disappears, then it takes place again, then it disappears, then it remains high, in this case, for enough intervals of time, or in any case, for a continuous interval. Then it stops again, and finally we have a very short shot in time, and then definitively finishes. This situation clearly represents those problems we mentioned before. The on-off signal represented expresses the contact between an object and a limiting switch, but this contact is not continuous. Some rebounds take place, and the general representation of what happens is a non-continuous set of on-off signals, while instead they should correspond to only one event in time. Instead, looking at such a kind of figure, one could be erroneously persuaded that four events took place. How the algorithmic filtering can work? We have two possible approaches, let's say two philosophies. The first one is to consider every commutation as well representative of an event that indeed, that really took place. Under this point of view, the figure that we have described previously must be interpreted into a different way. The first commutation is really an event that took place, but then the contact was not continuous. Then we have again a contact, and finally it finishes. Moreover, at the end of a certain time, we have another event, another situation, enough long in time, with only a small, let's say, event of noise at the end of it. The so-called first edge filtering approach is very suitable in a case like this, because it considers good the first commutation and accepts it. Then it neglects for a certain interval of time everything, every commutation happening in the meanwhile, and then it starts again to consider what is happening for the successive acquisitions. Be careful. Neglecting what happens doesn't mean no sampling. Sampling continues, but those commutations that happen in the interval of time after the first one will be simply not considered, not accepted, and the level of the signal that previously was acquired will be kept fixed even in during this interval. Looking at the figure, we see that at the beginning we have a commutation, an edge, a rising edge from low to high. Correspondingly, at the instant of time into which this commutation is detected by the microprocessor, that is at the corresponding sampling time, the signal in the point of view of the microprocessor will be raised up to high level. And the sampling will continue, so the microprocessor will detect the commutation towards low, and then the next commutation towards high that the signal feature. But the algorithm will not consider it for all the time t, all the interval of time t that has been chosen a priori as the time into which the events that happen must be, let's say, ambiguous, must be erroneous. In any case, do not provide any useful information. So you see that the signal in output is kept fixed up to the end of that interval, after which the signal is sampled again and the commutation towards low level will be detected and accepted in output at the successive sample time. At the sample time, I mean, into which that commutation is detected through comparison with the previous level acquired. Next situation corresponds to a commutation that has been considered valid. So now a new interval of time t starts, after which the microprocessor detects the new commutation, the new long commutation, and accepts it. For another interval t, no other commutations are accepted, but this is not a problem because no other commutation happened. And only at the end of the long interval into which the original signal was high, the commutation towards low will be detected and accepted. And again, no-fly zone equal to t will start. This shows another possible effect of such a kind of approach, of such a kind of algorithm, that is, it filters the isolated spurious better. It filters those phenomena whose duration doesn't correspond to the interval of time we have set a priori. This interval of time is called transition dead time or dead time, and must be established on the basis of a priori knowledge of the significance of the phenomenon we are acquiring. In other words, we must know what kind of contact will be provided in the acquisition to the microprocessor, and we need to have an idea of the duration of the rebounding phase just to estimate such a kind of interval. This is a good algorithm that has a pro, as a presents a benefit, of course, that is, it reacts immediately. It is not, slow like the next one we will see. The drawback by which it is affected is that it doesn't work with the isolated spurious signals. That is, if we have an isolated signal, that is a commutation, single, not followed by other phenomenon, that could correspond not to a real event, but simply a spike in the acquisition of the signal, this algorithm takes it as a good one. And of course, this is a problem, or better, this could be a problem. It could be a problem because it is related to the duration of the dead time. In fact, if the dead time is enough short, even a spurious signal could be reacted. But of course, we need a knowledge about this. And in the case an event occurs that is too short with respect to the dead time we have estimated on the basis of what we know, Okay, in this case, our approach fails. In slide 27, a very simple and short assembly code is provided, is proposed, that implements the first edge detection algorithm. Again, we are making the hypothesis that we have an 8-bit data bus microprocessor. In this case, it is an Intel microprocessor. We have a microprocessor accumulator based, that is every operation, in particular the arithmetic ones and the logical ones, are made by using a specific register called accumulator. The accumulator in this microprocessor is a 16-bit register that is divided and used separately in two 8-bit registers, AL, accumulator low, and AH, accumulator high. Specifically, in this code, only the low part of the accumulator is employed. This routine is executed at every sample time, so it is periodically processed. The first instruction compares CMP, a memory location called transitory, with zero. Transitory is the memory location that corresponds to a counter and measures the expiration of the dead time. In other words, at a certain moment in the acquisition, in particular when a new commutation is detected, this variable is loaded with a certain value, the so-called dead time, and every time we sample the line, we try to see if this counter that is set to the dead time during the first commutation detected has become to zero. Because if it is zero, the transient interval of time has expired and we have to do something. Otherwise, simply we can proceed. In fact, look, compare that transitory with zero, jump equal. Equal means that the two quantities are equal, the two previous quantities compared are equal, and in this case it means that the counter has become zero. So we have to avoid the next instruction and simply go to the instruction labeled with the word regime. The instruction with this label is an input instruction that brings the content of the port we are using for the acquisition to the accumulator low. We appreciate in this case three things. First of all, that the port, as we have said in the past, is addressed by the microprocessor as a memory location. Second, this port is an 8-bit port. And third, this kind of microprocessor doesn't feature the so-called memory mapped I/O, but it has two instructions separately used for making access to memory locations and to peripherals locations. In this case, to interface with the port, the instructions that are used are in and out. So the content of the port is loaded into the accumulator low. Then we isolate the bit that will bring the signal into which we are interested. This is possible through a logic AND operation with a mask into which the bit that is important for us will be 1, while all the other bits will be 0. And we then have a comparison between a memory location that stores the previously acquired value for that bit, for that signal, with the present value of the accumulator, just to detect if a commutation took place or not. If the commutation took place, that is, if the comparison didn't provide equal information, we have to proceed with the execution of the instructions, that is, move the accumulator low in the memory location precedente, that means previous memory location. In other words, the location precedente stores the last acquired value into which we detected a commutation, just to take it as a reference for the next comparisons. And of course, we initialize the second move operation, we initialize the counter with the dead time. T morto in Italian means dead time. If the previous comparison between the precedente location and the accumulator low was equal, that is, no difference was detected, this means that we have no commutations at all, so we jump to the label ESCI, that is exit, and we simply move the previous acquired value into the accumulator low, and we conclude the routine. Note that this last move, this last transfer of the precedente location into the accumulator low is necessary due to the philosophy of the code, that is, in the accumulator low we want to have every time the filtered value, and we can arrive to this point, to the ESCI exit point, not only due to the execution of these instructions, but even if the first comparison, that is zero with the counter, zero with the transitorio memory location, wasn't equal, that is, the counter wasn't different from zero. That situation corresponds to a sampling time. We enter in the routine, we see that we are in the transient interval after the detection of a commutation, and we decrement the transient counter, and then simply we exit, because we have only to wait, since waiting corresponds to filtering every other thing that is happening. So we jump to exit and we move precedente, that is the previous acquired value with a commutation, into the accumulator low. And this is the routine, just to have a comment about its duration. We could estimate how long is it, since we can know how much clock cycles will be necessary for the execution of every instruction. Compare is more or less an arithmetic operation, like a jump, like a decrement. The input is a memory transfer, so it is as long as a load or a store, and is a logic operation, so more or less can be considered equal to an arithmetic operation, and the two movement two move operations AL to precedente and T morto to transitorio are exactly memory transfers, like the last one, move precedente in AL. Typically, we can say that arithmetic operations take three clock cycles, while memory transfer, depending on the type and the architecture of the microprocessor, take 5 or more clock cycles. So simply by adding the clock cycles taken by every instruction executed in the worst case, that is when the jump are not taken, we can have an estimation of the duration of the code. And this is very important because the duration of the code will be corresponding to the fastest thing that we can detect. Of course, this is the time that we need for filtering the signal, so we cannot be fastest into the acquisition and into the elaboration of the signal, or then the duration of such a kind of routine. Therefore, the duration of the routine is a limit that we have, and it is important to have a correct estimation of it to perform right operations, and in particular to respect, as usual, the real-time constraints that in such a kind of situations often is required to our acquisition. The second algorithm that we present for filtering on-off signals goes into the opposite direction with respect to the previous one. If before we accepted any commutation in the input signal while neglecting those that within the defined death interval happen immediately after it. In this case, we perform a, let's say, stability choice. In other words, the commutation that the algorithm detects is kept, is accepted, only if the level of the signal is maintained for a suitable time interval that again is called dead time or transient death time. In other words, the interval that a priori is prefixed, considering that within that range all the transient phenomena should expire. In slide 28, this application is well explained and highlighted. Again, we have two time diagrams. The first is the original signal as it comes from the external world. The lower, in the lower part of the figure, we have the filtered signal. At the beginning, we have a couple of spikes, let's say, a couple of on-off signals corresponding to two commutations. Like in the previous example, all those dotted lines correspond to the sampling of the microprocessor. That is, every period, the level of the line is red, and the eventual commutation is established by means of a comparison between the present value and the previous one stored into a suitable variable. In the figure we have a first on-off commutation, a second on-off commutation. More or less they have a duration that is a little bit larger than the sampling period. Then we have a very consistent and very long signal whose duration is very larger than the dead time, and finally a further spike. Considering that the algorithm keeps accepted only those commutations that maintain their level as much as the dead time interval, the first two on-off signals are completely filtered. So they are represented in the filtered version of the signal, while the third one, the longest one, is kept, but is presented in output only after the expiration of the dead time. In fact, the algorithm must wait that the interval is expired to say that the level has been kept fixed, and for this reason to accept the commutation. This is the main drawback of the algorithm, that if filters the so-called spurious signals, because they are not long enough to overcome the transient time, on the other hand, introduces a low-pass, so-called, effect, that is a delay. The delay equal to the transient interval necessary to establish if the level of the signal is fixed or not. Another characteristic of the algorithm is that it joins two phenomena that are very closely related. Observing again the sequence of the pulses represented in the upper part of the time diagram, we see that after the longer sequence of time steps into which the signal is made of, we have a very small spike whose duration may be considered a little bit less than a sampling period. In this case, considering the activity of the algorithm, we will have that after the first commutation of the long sequence, we will wait t instants of time, then we will accept the commutation and the signal will be presented in output. Then, if we have, like in the upper part of the signal, falling edge that brings the signal from high to low, this commutation is accepted under condition. That is, if within the interval other commutations will take place, that commutation is not accepted. And this is the case. In fact, you see that within two sampling periods, we will have again another raising edge that cancels the previous acquisition. So, in the filtered signal, the level is prolonged, and only when the small spike will go low, again the algorithm will apply the interval period of analysis, after which it detects that the signal is definitively low in this case, and now the filtered signal can be set to zero, to the low level, so finishing, concluding the filtering. This is another issue, another aspect of the algorithm that could be considered positive. In other words, if the mechanical contact by which the signal is characterized is made up by a consistent part that represents the good contact between the moving object and the limiting switch, together with one rebound, very 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 small, okay, it is good to consider both the signals we have like as belonging to the same concept, to the same signal, to the same computation. And exactly this choice is the one made by the algorithm. Now we consider the code shown in slide 29 that implements the expired transient detection algorithm, so the second of the approaches that we have presented. Again, we have to make the same hypothesis we did in the previous one. That is, we are employing an 8-bit database microprocessor, accumulator-based, that is, most of the operations that are executed by this processor include the presence of a specific register called accumulator. The accumulator is 16-bit wide, but it can be used in two separated parts, the so-called accumulator low, AL, the one that is mentioned in this code, and the accumulator high. The first operation that is executed by this code is an acquisition through the port of the microprocessor in AL port input signifies to us that again the particular microprocessor we are considering is not memory mapped, but the space in memory is doubled. The same addresses are devoted to addressing memory locations, but also peripherals. And the difference is in the different instructions that are used to make access, move for accessing, for reading and writing memory locations, and in and out for making access to peripherals. And this, as we well know, activates suitable control signals that perform the discriminations among the two virtual memory spaces. The second operation that we consider is a logical AND through which the particular line bringing the signal on off to which we are interested is isolated, is identified. N is the bit in the mask that will be set to 1, while all the other are set to 0, are null. So at the end of this operation, we will have in the accumulator low a result into which all the bits will be 0 except the one that brings the on-off signal we are filtering. Remember that for what concerns the logical and arithmetic operations, including the presence of the accumulator, as I said, the results are always written in the accumulator itself. Now we have a comparison. Compare the accumulator with the memory variable precedente that stores the previous value acquired in the previous sampling time, and again the comparison is finalized to establish if a commutation took place or not. If no commutation, that is, if the comparison gave the result of equality, we have a jump, that is, we don't execute the following instructions. Instead, if a detection has been done about a commutation in the signal, we initialize the memory variable transitorio with a constant value. As in the previous algorithm, the memory transitorio stores a counter, basically, that decrements every time this routine is called the initial value that is charged, is loaded, indeed, when the commutation has been detected. This value is called T morto in Italian, that corresponds to the English dead time. This is the time corresponding to the transient phenomena we want to filter, and of course must be known a priori. Then we exit from this part of the code by simply storing the accumulator in the variable precedente. This is due to the fact that now we have to exit because we have detected a commutation, we initialized the counter, and now we save the present state of the on-off signal in the variable that will be used next time for performing the comparison and for establishing if a commutation or not took place. So after this jump ASCII, jump exit, into which there is a memory transfer of a variable that is called valid. This memory variable is a flag, basically, that says that includes or if you want stores the present value considered valid of the signal that has been acquired, so 0 or 1, of course. And the idea of the code, better the constraint of the code, is that the accumulator law must always contain the valid value to be available for further codes, for further and successive elaborations. Now, let's come back to the initial comparison. I mean, when we perform the comparison between AL and precedente, we said that if that comparison provides an equal output, the jump will be to the label called stabile. The sense of this, the significance of this label, is that no commutation has been detected in the present sample time, so the only thing that we have to do is to decrement the transient counter, and if it is different from zero, we have to exit simply from the code. Otherwise, we have to manage the particular situation that the transient has expired. And what does it mean, this? It means that J and Z, that means a jump non-zero ASCII, will not be executed since after the last decrement of the variable transitory we will obtain zero. So we will move precedente in the accumulator, and this value of the accumulator will be stored in the valid memory location. That is, we had an initial commutation, we initialized the suitable counter with the transient time, and we continued to enter into this routine, decrementing the counter without detecting any other commutation. This means that value should be considered valid because the level of the signal was kept fixed for all the duration of the so-called transient dead time. Consider this particular property of the microprocessor that obliges us to move the content of a memory location into the accumulator, and then to move the content of the accumulator to the memory valid, to the memory location called valido, corresponding to the valid value. This is a particular constraint in such a kind of microprocessor that foresees the usage of the accumulator even when we have to perform memory transfer that cannot be done in a direct way, but must be broken into two instructions involving the accumulator. The remaining of the code is the same, so we prepare the accumulator with the valid value and then we return to the routine that called such a kind of subroutine. Till now we have seen circuits, algorithms, policies to properly manage the acquisition of on-off signals. A couple of words should be said also concerning the output possible from the microprocessor of again output signals. And this is typically done by means of suitable ports featuring the presence of latches. The need for latches is clear because they allow to provide permanent values, typically under a command, under an enable command, so they allow to synchronize a signal in output from the microprocessor, and this is important because the interlocutor of the microprocessor should know the instant of time into which to perform the acquisition of a correct and stable value. What are the values that can be sent in output from a microprocessor through the latches? For example, initial setup values, or values that must be the restart information for the process or for an actuator after the reset operation, or simply those values that will manipulate the process through the actuator. So we have two possibilities. We can simply write in output a number, a value, that perhaps will be converted into a voltage by a digital to analog converter, and then will power supply, for example, a motor to perform a certain operation onto the process. Or, in other cases, we will need to output only one on-off signal, a particular bit specifically chosen. And again, in this case, we will write a byte or a group of bits, 16, 32, whatever. But we will mask all those bits that are not interesting for us, keeping only those that must bring in output the on-off signals that we want to send to our interlocutor in the communication. Image variables that are used for doing this foresee the presence of AND or XOR masks. And now let's look at one of those typical components, latch-based, that are used for such a kind of interfacing. One of the most popular is the so-called 374. In the figure, again, you see the two possible packages that you can find into the market. The first one with a rectangular shape, the second one with a square shape, and this depends on how convenient is for you to put the first or the second in the board into which you have to connect this to the microprocessor. The logic structure of the output port based on the latches is presented into the upper right part of the slide. Here you see that we have in this case, for example, 8 latches, so we are considering the case of writing in output 8 bits. All the inputs that arrive from the microprocessor are called D0, D1, D2, and so on up to D7. And the transfer in output is ruled by a clock pulse. It is better to say a synchronization signal that is indicated in the diagram with the name CP and is sent to the enable input of every one of these group of latches. The output of these latches is sent for everyone to a free state buffer. So again, we have the possibility of decoupling this component with respect to the bus that eventually it has to share with other components, other devices. And the command that rules every free state buffer is this signal called output enable low active that is sent to everyone to allow or deny the transfer of the output of the latch directly on the bus shared with the interlocutor in the communication. The truth table reflects considerations that we have already done. So only when the output enable is low, we will have the transfer of the input directly into the output, when, of course, the clock pulse will feature the rising edge. Instead, when the output enable signal is high, every input we can write in the latches will be not transferred into the output, and the output will be in the so-called high impedance state that will not influence anymore the state of the shared bus with the other partners in the communication.